Welcome to the New Life Live podcast. We hope to provide help and hope in your life through God's Word, counselors, and psychologists as we answer questions from listeners who call with the challenges of life. Let's go to today's episode.
Hey everyone, welcome to New Life Live. I'm your host, Brian Perez. So grateful for Christian Counseling Radio. I'm sure you are too. We are so grateful for the listeners and viewers of Christian Counseling Radio, New Life Live, the viewers of radio. That just sounds like that's something we wouldn't have said years ago. But yeah, we are streaming on Facebook and YouTube. We know many of you watch us that way as well, and we're so grateful. I'm here with Dr. Jill Hubbard and Dr. Jim Burns, and we're going to go to the phones in just a moment. But Jill, hi, what's on your mind?
Well, now that you can hear me, you know, I was going to present something else, but then I started thinking on the way here. And since I'm here with Jim, I'm going to switch topics. I'm also going to take Chris's spot a little bit because there's a little bit of a confession here.
Okay.
So I was thinking about marriage later in life, Jim.
Yeah.
And certainly, I mean, people know I was divorced for a really long time and single mom, raised my kids, and that I got remarried a year ago. And but this weekend, my husband was ill. He had had surgery. He was sick, not feeling well. And so I had to wait on him a lot. And I have gotten really spoiled in a year's time because I realize how much my husband does for me and how much he actually waits on me. Yeah. He comes home earlier than I do. I come home later. He cooks for me. He does all kinds of things. So he was ill. So I really had to think, okay, I need to, you know, be loving and empathic and take care of him. And at times I had like, you know, I would come home from work because he's still ill. And I'm having to like do everything and go get the food and right, because I don't cook. And I, oh my gosh, I'm being a little selfish here. And so thinking about just marriage and then marriage later in life, you know, relationships are never perfect.
Right.
And they do help us see ourselves,
yeah,
and help us to grow. And we never stop growing. But I think about the things that I do now differently than married the first time. And, yeah, and right, you know, when ideally, I think people get married, they work out their childhood stuff together, they grow, they mature, they deepen their love. That's, yeah, ideally. Mm-hmm. A lot of times it doesn't go that way. My husband now, we had to work out our stuff kind of separately and then coming together. And so I really try, like every morning, to have a heart of gratitude for him. Mm-hmm. He's not a perfect guy. Mm-hmm. But I try to think. And then when there are things that just like bug me, I'm like, okay, but in the grand scheme, right, like the good just so outweighs the bad. And so I feel very fortunate. So even like, okay, Jill, like buck up and take care of this guy. And he's like, you're the best. You've taken care of me better than anyone. I'm like, if you only knew. And so just the idea of, right, our feelings and our actions, our thoughts don't always align, but we make choices to do the right thing.
Yeah.
And that's part of being committed, being dedicated to another person and serving them, because it's mutual submission and mutual serving.
Yeah, there's even a scripture that talks about that. Ephesians 5, 21 says, submit to one another, mm-hmm, out of reverence for Christ.
Yes.
Submit and serve are very close words. So sometimes we're called to just serve. And the bubble in our head is going to go, this might not be fair today. I don't want to do,
right,
this, but we
and,
do it anyway.
And I know there's huge problems in a lot of marriages.
Sure.
But for some marriages, it's making a choice.
Sure it is.
Every day.
It is.
And every incident.
Yep. So good.
And we're going to talk to you guys on the phone in just a minute about those huge problems that you're going through, whether it's in your marriage or with your kids or at the workplace. We'll be right back here on New Life Live.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
We are International. I love saying that. Sam in Ontario, Canada, was referred to us by a friend. So first of all, thank your friend on our behalf for letting you know about New Life Live, and thank you for calling in. How can we help you today?
Well, I'll start from the very beginning, a bit about myself. I'm 56. I have a beautiful 11-year-old boy who's the love of my life. He loves me, too. I'm no longer with his mother. It's been many years. She got remarried. She has five different children from five different men. I've been doing my utmost a few years ago trying to say, look, I only have 30% of my son. I need more time. And she refused. My son would call constantly. Mom, can I, you know, from my house, Mom, can I have more time with Dad? No. Hundreds of times throughout the year. So finally, I took the leap of faith. Friend said, get a lawyer. So I got a family lawyer, went through the process, and things were going well. And then, obviously, and then a little mishap happened. I spanked my son once, very lightly. She calls what we have here, the Children's Aid Society. They made a report. She called the police. Just a fiasco. That was eventually dropped. And now we started going back to the family court. Things were going well. And then my son and I were driving. I was driving to school a few months ago in the morning. And he got recently diagnosed from a naturopath with ADHD. He was putting his arms in my face while we were driving. I pushed it. Obviously, he's going to go tell his mother. His mother makes a big stink. She calls 911, police report. So I'm back at it again, and they just want to. I have a lot of bitterness, and as a Christian for many years, I can't take it anymore. It's an ongoing thing. Anything, little episode. She has disputes with her other kids that left the home at 14. I'm from a Mediterranean background, Italian. We're very affectionate, family oriented. She's not, unfortunately, you know, but just constant battle with her other kids who left. Now they're in their early 20s, mid-20s. And I see the stuff my son vocalizes. There's stuff there too where she gets a little aggressive and her new husband. So my question is, I can't take this anymore. I've seen the constant, I'm going to use the word, I know people don't like to use it, but I'm going to word it, narcissistic. She has the traits. I've been studying it. Therapists have told me. I can't take anymore. And I love my son. That's the thing. And he loves me. Now I'm under supervision. I have to pay a thing just to see. I'm innocent until proven guilty, and I have to pay a fee. And she, in addition, made a complaint, and now I can't even see my son. So it's an ongoing thing. I turn left, she's there, and not even in her presence, and she'll do anything to control me, even at my own house with my son.
Yeah, it's antagonistic parenting. And you've never reported her for any of her infractions?
I should have went to the police, but it's not in my nature to go and cause things. But now that I know, God willing, when I see my son again, if it does happen, of course, I'm going to call the police. She called 911, which is crazy.
It's crazy,
and
yeah.
And so now I got to go through the court thing, and it's just an ongoing thing. She's like that with her other kids. She's, like I said earlier, she's got five different kids from five different men.
And Sam, is there anything in Canada about parent alienation?
I am on a Facebook page. A lot of them are from the United States, from your country. I have some friends who are going through the same thing, go ahead.
And there is a double standard, I think, with men and women, unfortunately. But to have your attorney, you know, or someone who can be an advocate and can, you know, I mean, your ex-wife has a precedence for being, you know, litigious, and so... and the idea of parent alienation that could make a case for you in that regard. And that you could even share with, you know, she's had all of these, you know, incidences that have happened. You haven't been report happy.
Yeah. Well, she has a list. Like it was revealed at the family court about a year ago when things were well, and what she's done with her kids was physically fighting them. So... Mm-hmm. I know my son loves his mother. I know that. I can see that. He vocalizes. It's not.
And you want him to.
Yeah, of course. But my goal was to like, she's just an argumentative, combative. I'm easygoing, but I have got a strong point, too. I'm not going to be a doormat for her.
Right.
Because I know that people who are, I'll use that word again, narcissistic, they're gonna control your life. Mm-hmm. And I stand up, and obviously she doesn't like that. Anyone who stands in front of someone who's extremely combative and controlling, you know, it obviously doesn't work for her, but I'm, yeah.
They want to annihilate, you know, so it's not enough just to leave you. They want, they do have an unconscious need to destroy.
Hmm.
So,
but why though? Why? I'm a good guy. I give her.
It's not about you. It's not about you. It's about her, right? So, and the brokenness in her. So here's the thing, though. Of course, you're mad, but do not hand anything over to her to use. So, as mad as you are, think about the love you have for your son, and whatever restrictions are put on you. Still see your son. It's not fair. It's not right. It makes you mad. But follow the rules. And so that you can show a precedence of cooperation and doing what is told, even though you disagree with it. Right? Because you're not going to win the battle by protesting yourself and pushing against the system in that way. You can win the battles by, one, keeping relationship with your son, because he is going to get older every year, and, you know, then having people fight on your behalf. And I know family court is the worst. It's the most unpredictable, but it's what we've got. And so, you know, get someone.
I have to use the court, the family court, for leverage, because it didn't work with her and I for many years. So
sure.
I have to at least put that in place. It's working. It's taking a little longer than I thought. Obviously, paying money now. In Canada, my son's 11 and 13, I believe. He has the right. I can't coerce mm-hmm. him. But if he chooses to live with me, that would be. I would feel a lot better, and he can visit his mother anytime. But I would like to have my son and spend time and do all the curricular activities that he doesn't do with his mother, and just the love and all that. He loves his mother. I'm telling you right now.
Right.
And she loves him too. But it's just. I have never, my mother, who's 80 years old, Italian lady, very compassionate, will cook whenever he comes over, you know, all that stuff. He goes home, he doesn't, you know, if he doesn't like the food, she says, go upstairs and that's it. You're going to your bedroom.
Mm. Yeah.
Things that he has to deal with without eating for the night. For me, at that age, like if he's older, that's a different story, but at 11 years old, I'll make him whatever he needs, chicken, whatever he likes.
I know, it's really hard.
The desire of his heart. It's extremely hard.
Yeah. And so you're Italian, so you're very expressive, right? So you have to manage your emotion, right? Find to share with us, share with your friends, your mother, your support system. But then, you know, with your son, right, you're going to be the steady anchor in his life. Mm. He will notice the difference. And, you know, he's getting to the age where, I mean, when kids are younger, they really need their moms. But he's getting to the age, and, you know, certainly by 13, 14, where, yeah, he could, you know, move away from mom some if he chooses. But it might not be safe for him. So you have to be aware of that. He might not choose that until he's 18. And so, unfortunately, I know, you know, in divorce, this is, you know, divorce is never good. The ripple effects and the fact that the courts kind of own your kids. You don't get 100% say-so, and you only get half of the influence. And for you, it's 30%. So, you know, any gains, you know, that you could work on, you know, could you get 40%? Mm-hmm. You know, small victories, I would work on. And, yeah, and get a good team to fight for you.
Jim?
Yeah.
You know, Sam, I think you, in the long run, are going to win this battle because this son of yours, he's not dumb. He's going to get it. And I actually think that as time goes on, he'll move toward you because you're compassionate, you're loving, you're steady, none of the things that he's getting from the other house. Mm-hmm. And like you say, you don't want to put the other house down. You just simply want to be you. So I think how it's probably going to play out is that as time goes on, as long as you hang in there, and I know you're at wit's end, and I get it. But as long as you hang in there and you're that steady place, where's he going to go? He's going to go to you. Kathy and I, my wife and I, were having dinner with a couple who their kids wouldn't speak to them through 18 because of the wife. It's a very similar situation. And guess what? Now they're totally involved in the life of this dad. The boys are, and they're married and they have grandkids and all this kind of stuff. So when you looked at the timeline, those first, I think they got a divorce at about age 11. So, you know, those 7 years were horrendous. And then it just kept getting better and better and better and better. And today, both of the boys live by them, not by their mother. And, you know, I'm sad to say that the mother's decisions and, you know, there's consequences to her decisions. So they're tied in. That's now been years and years. These kids are probably 40-ish. So if you look at it in the long run, I think you just...
Yeah, play the long game.
Play the long game on this one. And as much as you want to just pull out your hair and scream and shout and, you know, do whatever, at the same time, don't back down.
Yeah. And if you're able, go to the school events. Yeah. Even if you're not taking him, show up if he's involved in an activity. Yeah. He's doing something at school.
Right, right.
Go and be there. Be as much a part of his life as you are able to.
Right, right.
You got to love tomorrow more than you hate right now.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, that's good.
Ooh.
Yeah, I read that in a book recently. A book in the newlife.com store, The Life-Changing Art of Self-Brain Surgery. It's a really good book. I picked it up because I thought it was called Self-Brian Surgery, but it's Self-Brain Surgery. Good book by Dr. Lee Warren. We had him on the show just a few weeks ago. And so check that out. But great book. Sam, thank you so much for calling us today. And everybody watching and listening, if you could please keep Sam and his son in your prayers, and that he'll just be able to develop that relationship in spite of everything that's going on. Anne in Waynesboro, Virginia, you are next. You watch us on YouTube, and we thank you for doing that. What's going on? How can we help you?
All my life, I've traded my peace to please others, and now I'm just feeling like God is demanding that I live in peace, and my surroundings are not allowing that to be achieved. Tried different things. My family wants me to pretty much live in my surroundings and find my peace within. Her dad living with me, who continually puts me down and cusses, and I just feel like my anxiety is soaring anymore, and it's caused some nonstop pain, and I just don't know what else I can try.
So your family is telling you they want your dad to live with you and you to be the caregiver?
Yeah, I have COPD and heart failure, and he has Alzheimer's and a muscular disease. And those are probably the two worst things to correlate. And so he's got a part of his brain is affecting his anger. And his muscle disease is a Charcot-Marie-Tooth, where he has trouble, you know, with muscular issues and walking.
Wow.
And I'm on oxygen with COPD.
Yeah, it sounds like you need someone to take care of you.
And I have fibromyalgia as well, which is this anxiety has just made me unstuck. But yeah, I pay people when I can to come over and help me.
And is your dad in your home now, or they're just proposing this?
It's actually my husband.
Oh, okay.
All right, Anne, we've got to go to break. We'll continue our conversation with you when we come back. We also want to talk to Charles and Jenny and anyone else who calls us today here on New Life Live. I'm Brian Perez, here with clinical psychologist Dr. Jill Hubbard and parenting expert Dr. Jim Burns, who's the founder of Homeward and has written several books that are in the newlife.com store. We want to help you with whatever it is you're going through. Find out more about us on our website. Follow us on social media. So many ways to stay in contact with us nowadays. newlife.com.
The To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
All right, let's go back to Ann in Waynesboro, Virginia. Thanks so much for holding through the break. So just to clarify, and for anybody who's just tuned in right now and they didn't hear the your backstory, you're suffering with anxiety, fibromyalgia, you're in constant pain, nothing seems to work. You're also a people pleaser, and your family is just telling you to live in your misery. They don't want to help, and they also want, who is it that they want you to take care of on top of having to take care of yourself?
It's actually their dad. Divorced a few years back, and they try to help. One daughter has twins, and so they try to help when they can, but they're just not available. But he has Alzheimer's, and you know they feel he needs to be back home, and to a big part, I agree, but it's bringing my health down really bad.
Yeah.
Before he moved back in, I had started exercise program, a no-salt diet. I was starting to feel better, and things have just went truly to the south, and I'm just trying so hard to give it to God. But I think my people-pleasing mentality is allowing it. You know, how do I live in peace? And
yeah,
I just feel like I need to, you know, stop it. Start doing what I want to do and not what other people want me to do.
Yes.
I don't know.
Like our Take Your Life Back class.
Yes.
Right.
Is one that talks about that.
So, Ann, this is your ex-husband. You're divorced from this man.
Yeah.
Right. But your kids are the ones who want him to come back and move back in with you.
Yeah.
I get your struggle. I understand. And as a person who could go into people pleasing, I understand that. I have two words for you: protect and honor. I think you honor the relationship. He is the father of your children, but also I think you have to protect your own health, your own mental health. And by protection, sometimes the best thing to do for protection is to say, this isn't at this point in time, this is not the best for me, and it's not going to be the best for him. What is he involved at all with the, you know, their social services could actually come and be your friend on this and kind of maybe help them. I'm not sure it's your responsibility, but if you did, you could call social services and find out what do we do with a man like this? How do we get some help?
And who else is in his life besides your kids? I mean, why are they wanting you? You guys divorced for a reason.
Yeah.
And I'm all for being friends and, you know, because you're always like family. But to take this on when you're not well doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And certainly to be able to say, I don't feel like I'm capable. I mean, to take care of someone with Alzheimer's, that is major.
Right.
And, you know, is there the possibility of him going into a memory care facility?
He denies having the issue, and he doesn't want anybody helping him do anything. It's a pride mentality that he's grabbed. And so that makes it hard to bring in any services.
Mm-hmm.
And he's declining really quick. But when I was in counseling, when I had the right insurance, I was told that this anger is going to probably stay with him, not to be surprised if it don't stay with him the remainder.
Well, and that's a stage of Alzheimer's is anger. And then they eventually get to a softer place if they live that long.
Well, that's what I was thinking, and she had said that depending on where it's affected, that it could be a long time. So I'm just, it's kind of like I see the kids' point because they don't want their dad living alone, suffering, you know, being in danger of being alone, and, you know, and all the things that come with it.
But if something happened to you, what would they do? You know what I mean? Like, where would they? Have they thought about that?
Right.
Question.
Is there a place where he could live, you know, like, I don't know what type of house you have, but live in a separate area, a separate unit, and you guys, you know, everybody help bring in caregivers for both of you so that there's help, right? But he would be nearby.
Yeah.
Versus right there in your house. Now you're saddled with your ex-husband again at the worst stage of his life.
Yeah. Do you have any thoughts?
Tell me about your kids. Why are they wanting you to do it and they wouldn't do it?
Well, my daughter is basically the only one. I've got an older child that has addiction issues and she's out of the picture.
Sure.
Okay. And my daughter, who has 8-year-old twins and a 17-year-old child, is just super, super busy. But she does, she's the only one that helps. Mm-hmm. And it's just, I think, you know, wearing her down.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And so, and then I've got a son that he was staying with, but he kind of helped encourage my son to walk away from the whole family due to an issue with women. So that's another whole story. But so that's my...
All right. So what takeaways do we give? And we mentioned the Take Your Life Back course that begins next week.
Right. But, well, Ann, I think it's the old adage of put your own oxygen mask on first. And I think for you to just people please your way into the grave is not a good idea. And so I would challenge you to think of alternatives. And, you know, I don't know, maybe, you know, you're going to check in on him more often, you're going to help out, but I don't think you taking on that burden sounds like the best idea.
Right. Boundaries are so key in this one.
Your daughter can say no.
Break time. We'll be back.
Every day we hear from people all over the world who are looking for hope. They've been lost in a relationship struggle, addiction, anxiety, depression, all kinds of ways. Wouldn't you love to be part of a rescue team? Don't miss your opportunity to be part of something that changes lives every single day, because everyone matters. Your generosity helps find them. And you know, we've seen God work in the lives of so many people over the years here at New Life, and we want to invite you to be part of what God is doing. 99 for the One is our partner program that you can give to the ministry on a monthly basis to make sure that we continue to reach out to the lost.
Call 1-800-NEW-LIFE, 1-800-639-5433, or newlife.com/99-for-one.
Join the mission, rescue the one, and restore the many.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
Good news and bad news about our Every Man's Battle podcast. The bad news is if you've been missing out, you're missing out on a lot of good stuff. So the good news is we archive it all on our YouTube channel, so you can go and catch up on past episodes, maybe watch a few of them this weekend on our YouTube channel and on newlife.com on our app. We also offer bonus content from the podcast. We send that monthly by email. If you want to sign up to receive it, just send an email to embpod@newlife.com. Put the words bonus content in the subject line, and you'll be added to the list. Again, that address is EMB, as in Every Man's Battle, pod, short for podcast, embpod@newlife.com. Jenny, we're going to talk to you after we go to Charles in Chicago, who listens to the New Life Live podcast. Hey there, Charles. Welcome.
Thank you guys so much.
Yeah, what's going on? How can we help you?
Well, just in brief, I need some wisdom on how to discuss boundaries with my girlfriend in a balanced and appropriate way. So I'll give a little background. So right now I'm in a long-distance relationship with a young lady who is originally from Brazil. She currently now lives in Boston. And I went out to see her actually over this past weekend. And we had a lot of good times. But if you know anything about the Brazilian culture, they're very affectionate people. A kiss on the cheek is more of a greeting than anything. But here in America, especially within certain Christian contexts, a kiss on the cheek is the most romantic thing that most people are comfortable with doing until marriage. So we were doing kissing, and there was instances in many of those opportunities where I backed away, and I was not really sure in those moments what my actual convictions were. And so I was trying to explain certain things to her. I made the mistake of trying to explain it to her in those moments of emotional things. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just trying to get some wisdom on that. Also, with balancing, I've tried to talk to some people, like my brother and sister-in-law and another good friend of mine who's in a similar situation. He's married to a Brazilian, and just try to get some advice from them. But I kind of screwed up yesterday with her on a call, kind of telling her about that, about some of the advice I was getting from my brother and sister-in-law about the kissing, and she got really mad at me because I guess she didn't, because she tried to tell me this multiple times during the whole thing, and I guess by doing so, I kind of signaled to her that I really didn't trust her. So I just need some wisdom on that.
She tried to tell you what several times? I didn't get that part.
Oh, sorry. So my main convictions were in some ways, like the types of kissing we were doing. And I did express in those moments, even though I was the one in many cases that initiated, that, you know, some of the stuff I don't want to do, but for her, it was actually quite normal. And we're both Christians. But she tried to tell me multiple times, hey, you're 30 years old. You know, this is not, you know, we're not children. We're not, you know, whatever. This is an okay thing to do. And I tried to explain some of my convictions, and I just really had a hard time doing so. There are times when she just really didn't understand. And there is a language barrier. Her primary language is Portuguese, and so we did have to say a lot of things through a translator. And so that's kind of the thing that she kept telling me. She's like, I told you that over and over again, that it's okay. It's not a sin. You're not doing anything wrong. You know, but when I talked to my brother and sister-in-law about it, they told me that they were doing the same thing in their dating relationship. And they're both Christians as well. Other Christians have different convictions on kissing. I know a few people who are more conservative, and there's people who are less conservative, but not going all the way. And so that's kind of a thing.
So this past weekend, was that the first time this has ever happened? Is this the first time you had ever met in person? What?
Yes. Yeah.
It was.
Oh.
Okay. And how long have you guys known each other?
So we've been talking for over, like, about 3 months, a little over 3 months.
3 months all online or on the phone or whatever, and you finally met her. You traveled from Chicago to Boston. You met her, and she was just kind of taken aback that you were so, you know, you didn't want to kiss her or whatever, but you're saying you have boundaries.
Yeah, I think she was more taken aback at how I expressed my openness to doing the whole kissing thing. Basically, I'll be just very blunt here. You know, she's completely open to French kissing, and that was something that I was not expecting. And that kind of, you know, I won't go any further into that, but yeah, that's something that I struggled with, and I tried to explain that to her.
Yeah.
But again, language barrier and trying to do it within the moment.
Okay.
And I did it multiple times, and she would call it be giving her a sermon. So.
Does she have the same convictions as you regarding sex before marriage?
In a sense, yes. To be upfront, she is not a virgin. So she's had experience before. I've never had this kind of experience. And so she told me that we're not going to do that. But I try to explain to her that I just want to be careful not to get too close to it. And there has been times when we kind of got a little too close to it.
Okay. Jim, man to man, what do you tell them?
Well,
First of all, I appreciate that you have convictions. I appreciate that she has convictions. And that's a good thing. I mean, in some ways, and I realize you say you've been connecting for 3 months, but this was your first date. Okay. So, you know, I think it's always wise that people set standards before they go to Inspiration Point, if so to speak. I realize you weren't at Inspiration Point, but you know what I mean. And you know, you guys will have, I would agree, I would suggest that not in the heat of the moment, like you were talking about, but that you set some standards with her and say, hey, here's what I feel comfortable with the next time we get together. And if she doesn't like that, well, you're learning a lot. That what's great about dating is that you learn about the other person. You learn about their likes, their wants, their you know, communication, what they think about, you know, the physicality of a relationship. And like you say, I agree with you. People from Brazil have, they're much more affectionate, you know, in many ways. That doesn't mean that she, it doesn't sound like she's saying, you know, on the first date, she wanted to go all the way. So I would suggest that you set the standard before. Say, look, Kent, you know, next time we get together, what do you think about us, you know, doing this? And then if you break that standard that you both set, then that's a concern. If you didn't, then you went, hey, great, we got farther along in their dating relationship. But, you know, for one date, now, again, I realize you've been talking for three months, and that is and dating is relating to somebody, it's creating a relationship, you're doing all of that, but to be together person to person, you know, that is a short time. So I would suggest that you do it again, you do it before you see her next time. And don't make it, I mean, if she's taking it as a sermon, don't make it as a sermon. Just say, hey, here's my deal. I mean, what's good about dating is you kind of go, here's who I am. Okay, and you're being real. And I love that, because some people, I remember talking to a person one time and I said, well, you're kind of faking all this stuff in the relationship. Someday, if you got serious in the relationship, you're going to have to come and realize I've been bringing a lie to you. You're not going to do that. So I appreciate that. So I would do it. I would have that conversation, not preachy, not luxury, but here's, you know, I want to see again, here's the standard I've got.
Well, and I think it needs to be, not a monologue, a dialogue.
Right.
So a discussion. So hear where she's coming from and seek understanding of how she sees it and where her line is. And then also you share where yours is and see where is there room to compromise there. But also this isn't just about, we can't do this thing, right?
Yeah.
It's about you want to lay an emotional foundation first. That's the reason why holding off from getting involved physically, it's because you want to lay a proper foundation. Right. And as soon as things get too physical, then you're always going to want to go back there and you circumvent getting to really know someone emotionally. So it's out of honor for her and the relationship and building that foundation. So you want to add in the positive reasons, not just, I can't do this because it's wrong.
Emotional intimacy precedes physical intimacy.
Yes.
And that's super well said. Say what Jill said to her.
Yeah, just find the podcast.
I have a friend named Jill.
That's what she said. Yes, yes. Just hold the phone up and say, here's what she said. But Charles, man, stay with it. Don't give up. And if she doesn't honor your boundaries, then maybe you find someone else. I don't know. Jenny, you're up next.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
Hey, a quick shout out to Sue and Cece and Carol and Rose and Terry, Donna, so many people that we've helped this week here at New Life Live, not to mention the ones we've helped just today, and we're going to help more. Jenny, you're up next here on the show, but I just want to invite everyone to come alongside what we do here at New Life. You can either be a Club 99 or a 99 for the One partner, where you provide a monthly gift every month, or you can make a one-time gift at newlife.com. You can also call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Or for text NLM to 28950 so that we can continue providing resources for the hurting men and women who turn to New Life in their hardest circumstances. You've heard tough situations all this week, and lots more people that we want to help. Your giving makes a difference. Again, go to newlife.com or call 1-800-NEW-LIFE or text NLM to 28950. Let's go to Jenny in Gainesville, Florida. Says here, you are a first time, you just found out about New Life. Hi.
Hi, good afternoon.
How'd you find out about
actually
us?
I've heard of New Life. Excuse me, I actually heard about New Life. You referred me to a counselor. She's very good. And so I happened to catch her show live today. So
nice.
Let me clarify that okay. I'm familiar with the app and with the different programs on there.
Okay, so maybe it's the first time you're calling us.
Exactly.
Got it. Well, what's going on?
Utilizing the counselor, she's really good. Seeing her on my own and just trying to pray against discouragement. Didn't know the discouragement setting in what the situation is. My husband gave up on counseling in the past. We also had coaching in the past, you know, where they have coaching, Christian coaching, and it was very good. And I blame myself, really, because I feel like circumstances, ourselves, but also, you know, we have different challenges, he and I. So it's like, my question is, how do I encourage without coming across like a nag? Because I have been accused of being a nag in the past, and, you know, of course I said, no, not me. But, you know, hearing these other calls, I'm going, yeah, okay, sometimes women, we have a tendency to, our encouragement can sound like nagging. So I'm trying to, how can I impart to my husband my needs without feeling bypassed, like my needs get bypassed? Like, how do I show him? Our communication styles are different. They always have been.
Jill's over here nodding her head if you're watching on YouTube. She gets it. Jill, what do you say to Jenny?
Well, excuse me, Jenny. Well, yeah, it's always the challenge, right? How do we come across? And none of us see ourselves and how we come across. Like, it would be great if we could record ourselves in relationship. I often say that we women, we try to make things better by pointing out what's wrong. And when we lead with that, and we're genuinely trying to help because we think, okay, if we can fix this, this, and this, and if you know, then you'll want to do better. But typically, men don't respond well to that.
Sure.
Even if you're 100% right. And so you have to find another way. So one is to think about when you finally do say something. A lot of times we say things and we're exasperated when we say it. Or there's that kind of angst and urgency in our voice. Or there's the disappointment or the discouragement. And so they will feel and hear the energy that you are putting forward. And so we have to think about, like, and this is with kids too, how do we take the emotion out? And this isn't I'm right, you're wrong, and frame it in a way that they can receive. So think about who your husband is and use your knowledge of him to work for you. Lots of husbands do better with praise. When you let them know throughout the day, different times, what you appreciate. Catch them doing something good and tell them. And be interested in some of what they're interested in, even if you're not.
Mm-hmm.
And then frame it like, have you ever thought of, or I'm wondering if you would be willing to consider doing this for me. Mm-hmm. I know you've got your own things, but I could really use your help, and you're really good at this. And so you frame it in a way that kind of says, I need you, but it's because, like, you think well of them and you think highly of them. Mm-hmm. And I think that most men respond better to that, to coming alongside. And so you get your needs met kind of indirectly without hitting them over the head with them and pointing out how they never do something.
What do you think, Jenny?
Yeah. I think what I'm seeing through going to counseling and also hearing what you're saying, my husband and I are both very direct people.
Okay.
And so he more than I. And okay. When you have two people that are used to being direct.
Yeah, bottom lining
job
it.
Or like in, right. You know, maybe I tend to gild the lily more, so to speak. I used to write, and my husband's like, get to the point, get to the point.
Okay, okay.
It makes me nervous. So I feel I have to, like, but I like what you're saying. Like, basically, find a way to broach it. Like, take the emotion out of it.
Yeah. So
maybe, like, don't speak to him first thing. Like, give us both time to wake up. And
sure. Like, when is he most receptive? And mm-hmm. and then if he's pretty direct, then okay, don't add too much flour, right? Flowery stuff in
right.
there or fluff, because he'll see through that. Mm. But be willing to accept his no. So, you know, say something nice to him, but also say, hey, would you be willing to do this to help me out? And he may say, no, I really can't do that. Okay, I'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Right? And you're that accepting no from him may make it easier mm-hmm. for him to say yes to you at times.
Yeah, I'm seeing a pattern that perhaps a lot of times he would say yes and then do it and then begrudgingly. And I didn't know that because he didn't show the emotion on his face. And I didn't hear about it till later that, like, I didn't want to do those things and now I'm resentful.
Okay, well.
So, whereas I maybe would read emotion and he doesn't read the same way on his
yeah.
face that others
yeah.
maybe do. Yeah.
Or maybe too, it's yeah. would you be willing to do this when you have time? Or versus, you know, I need this right now. Or right, like think about him and you're mm-hmm. you're asking. It's just like how would you ask a friend to do something for you? You wouldn't demand it. You wouldn't point out all the ways they haven't helped you, right?
Mm-hmm. No, I tend to be pretty self-sufficient, and I think that's part of the issue is both of us were pretty self-sufficient mm-hmm. people, and then various circumstances happened to make us more reliant, which I believe the Lord allowed that to show us our need
yes.
of him. And
yeah.
I'm trying to lean into that.
Yeah.
And I think that's a new feeling, maybe not a new feeling for him, but we're having to learn.
Yeah. Well, and maybe you even shared that it's hard for you to ask for help, perhaps.
Yeah, I've had to change my way of doing that. That's why.
Right, right. And that, you know, certainly you could try to do this yourself, but it would be a big help to you mm-hmm. if he were able. But you understand if he's not.
Jim, 20 seconds?
Yeah. Tell him what you want. Tell him what you need. And, you know, know that men look at needs differently. You opened with needs. Men look at needs differently than women, and men have different needs. So I would suggest a great book. It's called His Needs, Her Needs. William Harley. It's an older book. Mm-hmm. Read the book and take the test. Kathy and I had very different needs. We didn't even know it. So we had a 3-hour conversation on this needs stuff. And I realized I wasn't meeting her needs because she wasn't telling me what her needs were. I was supposed to know it. That didn't work. Anyway, good book.
You can find
His
that
needs,
on
her needs.
Amazon. His Needs, Her Needs. Jenny, thank you for your phone call today. And one final reminder that the New Life courses begin next week. Find out about them. Sign up for one of them at newlife.com. God bless you guys.
Thanks so much for listening. We hope something you heard will help you live in freedom today. If this content was helpful for you, we would love it if you would take a minute, leave a review, post about it, and rate it. Remember, we have resources and workshops online for you as you continue your journey. Go to newlife.com to find out more information. And thank you for being part of the New Life community. We know that God desires all of us to live a life of wholeness and healing, and we're so glad that you're here.